China is fast becoming a trading powerhouse to rival the United States, says the chief economist at Deloitte China, Sitao Zhu. In this podcast, Zhu assesses initiatives such as Made in China 2025 and the Belt and Road Strategy, which underline China's trade and investment ambitions and its more prominent role in the global economy. Zhu begins by offering his analysis of China's economic performance today.
Chinese economy is likely to surprise on upside. That's the first advice. Second advice is some of the risks in China are overstated. 2017 has been a great year for most economies, particularly for rich countries, developed countries. It's quite rare to see this synchronized recovery of developed countries. I mean, United States, everyone knew U.S. was going to do well. But Europe turned out to be a pleasant surprise. Japan has done quite well. China, as the largest trading nation, its economic cycle is very much linked to developed countries. So this bodes well for China. But the most important point, actually, I've been making in past many years is, can you name another major economy in the world where demand is actually not being met? So in many other countries, policymakers would really try hard to have consumers to take on more debt. But that's not the case in China. The risk, the leverage clearly is a risk, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't have to elaborate what rating companies have done this year, Moody's, Standard & Poor's, on China's sovereign risk. So that's a big issue. The Chinese government is addressing that problem. I mean, for four straight months, the credit growth coming down to less than 10%. So I think that's a welcoming sign. Secondly, are we willing to take tough decisions to really remove so-called zombie companies? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying China is doing everything right, because it's very, very difficult for any country to take tough decisions when you're not in crisis.
Zhu assesses the Made in China 2025 initiative, which aims to transform China into a world manufacturing power.
It has a global impact far beyond China, because in manufacturing sector, China is so dominant. Whether white goods or brown goods, China has dominant position. So to use a sweeping statement, mm-hmm. in several sectors, if China doesn't make money, no one would make money. So that is why industry consolidation in China has global ramifications. So what is a China in 2025? The essence of China 2025 is about upgrading China's manufacturing capacity. So you may view that as an aspiration and a roadmap to turn a manufacturing powerhouse of China into a gigantic Germany and Holland, which means you can produce manufactured product, but selling at a luxury goods price. Well, if China can do that, I mean, think about that, what's going to happen to other industrial countries? A lot of countries will be very nervous. But if China doesn't do that right, we could turn some of the promising industries into industries which are being plagued by overcapacity. The biggest stumbling block remains the target of economic growth. Right? Mm-hmm. I think in the medium term, this is a trade-off. If you want to pursue green growth, you must accept lower growth rate. Actually, China doesn't need a very high growth rate. It's $12 trillion economy, growing middle class, labor market is tight. There won't be any social turmoils if economic growth rate down to, let's say, 4%.
China is also investing trillions of dollars in its Belt and Road strategy to enhance trade and investment with Africa and Eurasia, as Zhu explains.
When we look at Belt and Road, we should view that as a more inclusive economic growth model, meaning you work with both developing countries and the developed countries. I actually would emphasize developed countries, because in order for Chinese companies to thrive in many of the frontier market, it's critically important to work with developed countries in order to mitigate geopolitical risk and political risk. At some point, you just don't want to be too dogmatic. In order to achieve sustainable development, you need to have good infrastructure. So that's a precondition. So I think China has been repeatedly emphasizing that. So for China to share that experience with some other less developed countries, I think that's very important. Because otherwise, some of these countries, they can never get started. Resources in Africa are very important. Mm. But just like resources in Australia, just like resources in Brazil, and resources in Russia. I mean, as the largest manufacturing economy, China needs stable supply of natural resources. Actually, it's beyond hard commodities, also about soft commodities. Mm-hmm. As the Chinese consumers are becoming richer, right? They are going to see the change of their diet. So for example, they would have more dairy product from not just New Zealand, also from Argentina, from part of Europe, from Holland, and from France.
Discussing relations between China and the US, Zhu gives his view on the potential for a trade war between the two superpowers.
I don't see a full-blown trade war, but I think some of the frictions are inevitable. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is a big picture. The annual bilateral trade deficit is about $350 billion. There was a 100-year program set by President Xi and President Trump in Florida, so-called 100-day program, which was aimed at reducing bilateral deficits. So far, we don't see much. Cannot just look at bilateral trade balance or imbalance. Mm-hmm. That's very, very misleading, right? When you deal with so many companies, complicated global supply chain. So I think both sides will be very rational when they come to trade imbalance. But there's one thing I do think China needs to take the Trump administration more seriously. That's market access. I think Americans are quite adamant on that. Chinese companies want to acquire, buy more U.S. high-tech. Mm-hmm. But in those areas, the U.S. government is unlikely to ease restrictions. Mm-hmm. At the same time, if you just look at the market share of Chinese product in developed world, it's actually almost at all-time high. I wouldn't write off United States. I think when you look at innovation, when you look at the deep capital market and this can-do attitude, mm-hmm. Of American businessmen, I think China has a lot to learn from United States.
Zhu also considers Chinese investment in the UK and Europe and the significance of Brexit.
Brexit will affect Chinese investment into the UK because Chinese investors, they tend to take the view getting into the UK will be a good precondition for getting into core Europe or Western Europe. I also think a lot of Chinese business people, they were being pragmatic. You know, in certain industry, they were saying, okay, if we got into the UK, we'll be benefiting from EU funding, for example, in certain sectors. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be changed. On the other hand, Brexit may result in other opportunities. So, for example, UK economy actually is strong. But if you look at all the currencies, I would argue sterling is really undervalued, mm-hmm. against both US dollar and also against the euro. Mm-hmm. So Chinese people, business people are also taking the view. So maybe a lot of the risk already being discounted, and with the sterling's compelling valuation, maybe it's a good time to get into UK real estate market. So see, that's how people think.